guys? Welcome back to West Coast Bias Season 4, Episode 8. Today we are going to do our NBA early season overreactions, three most interesting things that we see going on in the league. We're going to have a little bit of a fair therapy session to lead off over the very slow starts for the Blazers and the Kings. And then maybe we'll talk about which starts we think are sustainable and which starts we think aren't sustainable for some of the teams that have gotten off to surprising starts, whether they're either
for instance, good. Can the New York Knicks sustain this 2-win pace?
Yeah. Well, let's start with the, as I said, with the Kings and the Blazers. We can start with let's start with the Blazers, actually. The Blazers lost to the Kings last night. I did not watch the fourth quarter because I was very tired and not happy with the game. the Blazers obviously came into the season, as I said, with a high ceiling and a lower floor than they did last year. I think that was pretty widely acknowledged. I think there's three main things that to take away from the first 10, 11 games of the season for the Blazers. One is Damian Lillard is like undeniably a top five player in the league right now.
If they were 7-4 instead of 4-7, he would be as high in that MVP conversation as the other three or four people we're talking about right now.
Number two is there's no depth at any big position, which was obviously the worry after Harkless and Aminu both were let go this season via trade and free agency respectively. We have Mario Hezonja, who has maybe been somehow worse than people thought he was going to be. Feel bad for the guy, but he's just been absolutely awful. And the rotation once Zach Collins went down, which was really the crucial moment of the season with the dislocated shoulder, he'll be out till January or February. Has been just miserable with Scalabissier, who's been half decent, Tolliver and Hezonja at four. One of the big reasons, I think the biggest reason, but one of the main reasons why they haven't won many games is because CJ McCollum started off really, really poorly. He actually had one of his better games last night. But they've been in three or four games that they've lost late, which is not something that usually happens to them with Lillard and McCollum. And they could actually very easily be 6-4 and 7-4 if they hadn't blown late game leads to the Sixers and Spurs at home. And then I think they had, I forget what the road game was, but they had and the Clippers on the road. So they could very easily be 7-4, which is why I'm not freaking out too much. On the other hand, when you watch Moses Brown play a game, you watch Anthony Tolliver and Hezonja play like crap, and then the fact that Collins and Rodney Hood, who was a hugely underrated injury, and it's not a major one, but he's been kind of low-key really, really good since they acquired him at the trade deadline, and he had a really excellent start to the season when he went down. They pushed the load even more squarely onto Lillard's back. But yeah, they're 4-7 playing the Raptors tonight, who've been playing really well. We'll talk about them maybe a little later. But really, they're missing, essentially, they're missing the defense of Aminu and Harkless much more than people really could have expected even, particularly Harkless, I think. And just the lack of having a solid NBA player next to the rest of the roster, which is really talented, has been a big issue. What were your thoughts watching them in the two games against Sacramento this season so far?
So my biggest issue with the Blazers right now is that all of their best players are point guards, all three of them. And when Rodney Hood comes back, even though he's not really a point guard, he's a true scoring guard, that becomes four. And Rodney Hood, correct me if I'm wrong, will be back well for Collins and Nurkic, correct?
Yeah, he has back spasms, which are always a little scary, but he should be back theoretically. He was supposed to play last night and didn't end up playing, but he should be back soon.
Right, that's one of those things that could be 1 to 4 weeks. Hopefully will not be much longer, because they have a lot of problems with shot creation isn't one. Obviously Rodney Hood can guard the three, which is something technically McCollum, Lillard, and Simons all triple teaming NBA wing can't really do together. So that's a big strength, but I really don't think shot creation is what they're missing. It's really clear to me that what they're missing is guard, is specifically wing defense and big defense rebounding ability, and getting any offensive potential from anybody who could play off ball at all whatsoever outside of CJ McCollum spotting up off Dame Lillard, Anthony Simons spotting up off Dame Lillard. They have some creative solutions to this. They had a great run last night when they were running Simons next to Lillard because Simons is a little bit bigger and frankly did a much better job guarding Buddy Hield than CJ McCollum did on account of the Buddy Hield being only, what, 4 inches taller than McCollum, but probably 60 pounds heavier is kind of a size issue he's faced, obviously, with Klay Thompson in the playoffs last year, stuff like that. So they have some ways to not suck, but it's a real problem when you're basically just using redundant players that play the way your MVP candidate-type player does to get any other production outside of him. He is probably the best pick-and-roll orchestrator in the league. It's him, James Harden, or Kyrie Irving, and Kyrie Irving, for some reason, refused to do it all of last year, so maybe it's just him now. But the best center he has to run pick-and-roll with is Hassan Whiteside, who's not particularly good at that. The Jusuf Nurkić isn't even what you think of as a natural pick-and-roll center, but obviously was stellar in that role last year. Zach Collins is more useful in that role. I mean, basically everyone he's had before this is better than that, and the odds of them trading for a player, and they might be a player away, but the odds of them actually trading for a player that fits that role are pretty low. Like, who are they going to get? Are they going to decide, is Houston going to decide to tear it down and they get Clint Capella for a first-round pick? That feels unlikely.
Yeah.
They could.
So, I mean, go ahead.
Other people they could put in that role, pretty much anybody else, I think Boston would snatch up first because Boston has the same problem, is closer to contending and has more first-round picks to give away. So I don't even think they can get one without getting outbid before Nurkić gets back. So their offense is completely one-dimensional now, and their defense is relying on a bunch of guys who don't really do anything well, except for Hassan Whiteside, obviously, is great at help defense blocking shots, not actually good at help defense overall. And it becomes a real concern for them when you see what happened last night, which is defensively they gave up probably 6 turnovers because the Kings were scouting now their team very well and knew exactly when passes from the bigs were going back out to the 2-point guards, and almost every steal was either Gala this year or Hassan Whiteside trying to pass to either Lillard or Simons. I believe they had 5 off that, and then 1 more off of going towards Scalabissier in the second quarter. And that was the only reason they were in the game for the first half, when Buddy Hield started something like 0-5 for open shots from 3. And by the time the third quarter was going and their offense started hitting, the Blazers were out of it before 6 minutes left in the third quarter.
Yeah, I think the main issue, I think Whiteside's been pretty much what I expect him to be. He's been fine. He has moments that people really latch onto where he looks lazy and kind of disinterested, which I actually think is much more of a kind of a, I don't know, it seems to me less that he's a disinterested type of basketball lazy player and more that he is some sort of mental, I don't know if it's like kind of a minor depression type of thing where he's not really there all the time, or he's maybe has a little bit of a bipolar thing, but I don't see him as like a lazy type of player. And I don't think he's had trouble getting motivated. I think he just goes through sections where he's just very hot and very cold, and that's just the type of player he is. But overall, I think he's fine. He's obviously not as good as Nurkić. And even Scal has been adequate as a backup center for the most part. The issue really is with Tolliver and Hazonia, who both of whom have been absolutely horrible.
Both of them are really being asked to play center for some reason sometimes.
Sure, but Hazonia once Hood went down and once Collins went down, started playing a little bit of starting at power forward, and you know he's 6'8", he's a big guy, like he's a good ball handler. He should be able to play that position. He's just been absolutely awful. He's a guy that has a decent looking jumper, not a good one, but it looks fine. Looks like he'd be a good playmaker. He's a decent finisher at the rim. He's very athletic, and somehow none of those traits translate into actual production on floor, which I guess is really the story of his career, and why a few teams keep trying to pick up on him. And you know, he might get better. Terry Stotts has made worse players than him look better, but really the issue is right now, I think he's still only 24 or 25, so he's still pretty young.
Right. If Andrew Wiggins can do it, so can he, right?
Yeah, well, we can talk about the Wolves because I think they're a surprise to me. But, overall, CJ will get better. Damian Lillard's obviously performing at an MVP level right now. Simons is pretty much, he had a really rough shooting game yesterday. He also had some turnovers, but he's been just as good as advertised. I think a lot of people thought that the Blazers were just kind of baiting teams into thinking he's better than he was, but he could very easily be the best out of those three, just talent-wise in the next 3 or 4 years. I highly doubt, even if they, you know, get into a situation where they're really panicking, where there's something like 5-14 or something like that, or 6-15. I think he's untouchable. I don't think he's going anywhere. Whether if somehow Blake Griffin comes available or something like that, I still don't think they trade him. He's been awesome. He's taken over two quarters of games already, on the road against the Clippers, where they had to switch Patrick Beverley onto him because he was taking whoever he was getting guarded by originally so easily, and then he schooled Patrick Beverley for a little while. He's looked really good. Such a soft touch, smart, and he also knows when to shoot and when not to shoot, which is an attribute that a lot of young players don't have. So he's looked really good. Even Nasir Little, when he's gotten a few minutes lately, has looked better than Hezonja and Tolliver have. So he could potentially be a trade piece. I'm not really ready to panic. If they can get a guy like Gallinari, which is really kind of what's been thrown out there by most smart people lately, as kind of a happy medium between Blake Griffin and, you know, Kevin Love or something, I'd be fine with that. I think they definitely need something at the four, but it can't include Simons in that deal, and I wouldn't give more than a first round pick for plus Whiteside's expiring for him. So overall, it's just not something that I'm ready to worry about so much this early. It certainly needs to get better, but I think it will. And obviously then we have Nurkic and Collins coming back later in the season. So if they can just hang around till they're around 500, I think they'll be fine.
Right, and I think that's going to be key with when we get to the Kings too, is we have two crucial players, maybe not your best players, but some of your most important players coming back from injury halfway through the season. Maybe your goal is to just prove that you're a competent team without them, not necessarily a good team. And if you're 3 games below 500, you go on a, you know, Blazers always seem to go on a 10-2 run in January or February, get them right back at it. And then it doesn't really matter if you're a 6 seed, because we've already seen that this team can take on bigger and badder teams in the playoffs.
Yeah.
It's not like they're going to be scared of seeing the Nuggets again.
I think it'll be interesting. Damian Lillard's having the season that I think a lot of people, including myself, thought Curry would have, which is interesting. I mean, obviously they're similar players in a lot of ways, but they kind of, you know, the whole team gets injured, he starts playing well, kind of thing is really coming out right now. I'm sure they have a move. I think a lot of people are kind of panicking for them, and I'm not sure if the team and the organization's actually panicking, if that makes sense. Similarly, the Kings, I heard Kevin O'Connor say today that the Kings may be the fan base you'd like to be least in the league right now over the Knicks, and I was kind of stunned by that. I was on a podcast, and it's like, that doesn't make any sense.
We'll get to specifically Kevin O'Connor's opinion on the Kings in about a minute.
Yeah, well, I know he's had some, I mean, he's, I, well, this will transfer to the Kings now, I guess. That's really all I have to say about the Blazers. Just watch Anthony Simons for the rest of the year. That's all I'm saying. That's the kind of the good thing about these injuries, is that he's really playing in these three guard lineups with Lillard and McCollum a lot, which are a whole lot of fun. But
my last thought on the Blazers is that they could really, really, really use Michael Porter Jr. If the Nuggets decide that they still don't want to use him in their rotation for some reason, I feel like that's the perfect place for him to take a shot for 3 months and see if he can actually make that straight offensive skill set translate and defend bigger guards or bigger wings.
That would be interesting. So with the Kings, though, obviously we have Bagley out with one of the many hand injuries. Correct? It's a hand injury?
It's a first broken hand of the season. First he broke it on DeAndre Ayton's shoulder,
so
which is to tell you, DeAndre Ayton took a lot of steroids before he took those diuretics.
Yeah, so everyone else is really following him now that Gordon Hayward's kind of a follower.
Steph Curry,
obviously. But, yeah, I mean, I don't get why everyone's freaking out about the Kings. I think the Kings' issue was when they did have all of their players with the first two games, they looked like Luke Walton was a really bad coach, which obviously is an issue. that he tried to change their style from something that worked pretty well last year. But I think that's kind of getting merged in with the injuries, and it's combining to make people freak out a lot more than I think they should be. And obviously the fact that they're not going to be able to pay Bogdanovich next year, which I really like him, but I don't think he's really an integral part to the core.
Well, we're going to find that out real soon because he is the most important player on the team right now.
Yeah.
So first issue I have is immediately the Kings were the first team to find out that the Suns were good. They were actually beating the Suns handily by about, I think, 7 points until De'Aaron Fox got into foul trouble. But it was very clear that they were getting away with something. They were playing sloppy, and the Suns just weren't executing. The moment Fox went to the bench, there was about an 8-minute stretch where the Suns basically put the game away, something like a 27-4 or whatever run. Fox comes back in. It's already over. They get even worse things happen. For some reason, Walton decides to put all of the starters back in. And in the last 2 minutes of that game, DeAndre steps on Buddy Hield's foot and hurts him slightly. He interferes with Fox's landing, hurts him slightly, and unseen entirely somehow breaks Marvin Bagley's arm on a rebound, breaks his left hand on a rebound, and hurts him, leaves him out for 6 weeks. About 6 hours after that, he takes a P-test. Turns out he took a lot of diuretics, the mass belt steroids he took, which explains why he looks like the strongest man on earth, even though he claims to have never once in his life lifted weights until 2 years ago. And now, all of a sudden, the Kings go into game two hurt. 1 day's rest. I believe the first 5 games were all on 1 day's rest or back-to-back. And they come to this situation against a better team, look absolutely, genuinely terrible. Took them 3 games really to recover from that. That 5th loss against the Hornets, probably the worst one because they actually looked like a good team in it, and then they blew it in the fourth quarter. Come into game 6, and all of a sudden, this is the worst team in the league, right? Everybody's talking about 0-5 start, last team to win a game. Even the Warriors have already won one. The Warriors, at that point, had already given up on the season. Everybody but Bagley is still healthy, and that's when Richaun Holmes shows up. And my God, Richaun Holmes, immediately every issue that team had with its offense and defense was fixed, because the whole point of this system is that they're 2 bigs. They have 1 shooting big, and they have 1 pick-and-roll big, right? And Bagley was the rim runner, and Deadman was the shooter in theory, and defensively the opposite had to be the case. Once they put Bielitsa in, they basically had 2 shooters, and they were trying to use Deadman as the role man, and he's not fast enough or athletic enough to do that in this offense. They put in Holmes next to Bielitsa, and immediately the team looks like it's supposed to, looks like it did in the preseason. They went out and went crazy in 2 of their 3 wins of those 3, and then had a pretty solid tough win against the Nuggets in between. Terrible loss to the Raptors that they should have won, and then a near loss to the Blazers where they pulled it out. So now they've won 4 of their last 5. Minor issue being obviously that now De'Aaron Fox is out for 3 weeks to 2 months, depending on who you ask. The team says 3 to 4 weeks. People on Twitter say that the average for the last 3 people to have this bubble of sprain have been out 33 games. And now you're going into a situation where you're asking who's your point guard for a team that's running entirely off the point guard's decision making. It's got to be Bogdanovich because, frankly, Corey Joseph is enough of an offensive threat on his own to matter. And we saw that last night. Bogdanovich, 25 points, 10 assists, 4 steals. That's all you need to see. That's Bogdanovich is the guy. The only problem is Bogdanovich can't defend point guards. Yes. So we're going to see how that goes. It might be a major issue. There's a very real chance that when Bagley comes back before Fox, he looks terribly out of sorts and can't be played next to the starters. There's a very real chance that Holmes, who is right now the 3rd best player on the team, has to go to the bench to facilitate Bagley. And then we're suddenly talking about Bagley as being terrible because it's not going to be right. Fox isn't going to come back probably until mid-December, at which point they might be 5 games under 500. So they have a stretch, I believe, of 9 games in 17 days in early December. So if he misses 5 weeks rather than 3, it's downright catastrophic. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one beneficial thing for both of these teams is that rather than a stat, and this is kind of something that we talked about in our preview as well, is that there's not going to be any team, because of how good the West is, that's really going to pull away. So because there's 12 teams, and now that the Suns look good, really the Grizzlies are the only really bad team. The Grizzlies and the Warriors are really the only 2 bad teams in the West right now.
I think it's optimistic to include the Thunder in there, but
Yeah, but they're not easy win while they still have the roster
right.
They do.
But they're like the Wolves were last year.
Yeah, and the Wolves are playing better as well, which was a team I don't think anyone was really giving a chance to make the playoffs. So because of this, there's not going to be a big gap between the 8th and the 9th seed, or really the 4th and the 10th seed, or whatever it may be. So if any team, and there's been injuries on all kinds of teams all over the place, but really if any team can just kind of hang around for a little while and kind of get through the injuries, there's a pretty reasonable shot that they can make the playoffs. And I think that applies to both the Blazers and the Kings. By the way, in the preview, I did say that I thought the Blazers would start slow anyways. I wasn't obviously predicting the injuries, but I did predict a slow start. So I think it's obviously disappointing that for both teams with the major injuries that have happened, but I'm staying optimistic for now at least. Call me back in 3 weeks when they're 4-17. But for now, I'm not in a bad state.
I think one of the worst things for both of these teams is that neither of them can really make big swing trades because they have people coming back at their real positions of concern in the next month to 2 months. And you can't trade for a replacement for Nurkic because that's already what you did with Whiteside and it didn't work. So the best thing you could do is use Whiteside as a salary filler to get a player who's a strength at wing for when Nurkic and Collins come back and hope that you can ride it out with Scallops here. Right.
Well, like I said, Whiteside's not the problem. The problem is Hezonja and Tolliver. Right. And if they're making a trade, it's not going to be for a Whiteside replacement. It's going to be for whether it's Love, Gallinari, or even Blake Griffin. It's going to be one of those type of players.
It's going to be for a stretch for smaller big type.
Yeah. It is. It's. I don't know if Olshay will make a deal like that. We'll see. I kind of hope I'm just not a big fan of reaction trades, and especially with how well Simons is playing, not that I think he's going to be traded anyways, but I just don't see a huge benefit to trading even picks at this point for someone like Gallinari unless you're really sure that's going to really help your team. And I think it would, but how much is it really worth at this point? I think those are more trades that if the Blazers were playing really well and they want to get pushed over the hump, they might make, rather than we're at 500, we want to get up to, 46 wins, so we're going to trade a first-round pick and Kent Bazemore for Danilo Gallinari. I'm not sure if that's really the smartest move, but you never know. So let's transition into the three most interesting or surprising things from the Western Conference. What's your number three?
My third most interesting thing in the Western Conference is that the Lakers are actually immediately firing on all cylinders, which I did not expect. I thought that their clear depth issues were going to cause problems, and they have in the minutes that neither James nor Davis are on the floor. And even when it's just Davis on the floor, they are a net negative. But James and Davis together have been so overwhelming, especially with, weirdly enough, next to Dwight Howard, defensively and offensively, that it doesn't really matter that they're only otherwise competent with LeBron alone on the floor and just acceptable enough to pass by with just Davis on the floor. So their depth issues aren't catastrophic. And the sad thing to me is that means I have to give a lot of credit to both Avery Bradley and Dwight Howard, who have been really, really good defensively to start the season. Danny Green obviously is doing his job. He's an amazing 3-and-D player who's worth every bit of $17 million every year. But the real shock to me is that they have fourth and fifth players that are actually competent. Not surprised in the slightest that they're not Rondo and JaVale McGee, but probably the next two guys I would least expect to be good.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the surprise is Dwight Howard. He looks, you obviously can't recognize him. He looks completely different.
Right, and you can't even say he looks like he did when he was a Hall of Fame caliber player because he doesn't play like that at all.
And his shoulders somehow look like they're narrower, but he looks huge, somehow huger, and his entire body is just slimmer. He's been really good. My concern with the Lakers is that I think this is kind of peak performance for them, right? This is not peak performance for the Nuggets. It's not peak performance for the Clippers, obviously, or getting Paul George back this week.
For
the Jazz, or for any of these teams. The Sixers have we'll get to them in the East, but they've looked good.
The Rockets are struggled. One win behind the Lakers right now.
The Rockets are the team that I actually think are in huge trouble, but we'll get to them in a second. and really the Mavs. You know, there's a lot of teams here that some, a couple of them are playing at really their highest level, and I would argue that probably the Lakers are one of them. And it's hard for me to envision a scenario where Anthony Davis, who's continues to this bizarre desire to really act up on injuries and go to the locker room whenever he gets bumped and then come back and score 40 points, and then
the man, you know, loves the locker room,
rub at his shoulder and act like he's injured, and you don't really know if he's injured, and it's going to be an issue if he is injured, because obviously they're straight up not a playoff team if he's not healthy. So I'm interested in how well that they've been playing, and I've been impressed with Howard and Bradley and all the players you mentioned, and especially the LeBron's been awesome. He's leading the lead in assists this year.
Right, we're talking about three or four MVP candidates. He's my number one right now.
Yeah, I think I would still have Giannis and Luka ahead of him right now, because Luka.
I have him, Luka, Giannis right now, which is insane to me, because all three of those guys are, you know, basically 6'8" to 6'11" point guards that defend at a high level.
Right. Well, that gets us on to the next topic. My third most is how good Dallas has looked. They have the number one offense in the league without Porzingis being good at all. He's been actually actively bad. I think he's a minus on the court overall.
Here's my caveat for you. Does Dallas look good, or does Luka look like the best player in the league in 2 years?
I think it's Luka and the rest of their team. The Blazers played them and kind of escaped with a win early in the season. Collins dislocated his shoulder. But I think Luka obviously has been spectacular. He's essentially averaging a triple-double right now, 30-10-10, which is incredible. But players like Seth Curry, who I desperately wish the Blazers still had, have been really good. Maxi Kleber has been awesome. Jalen Brunson's been really good. Dwight Powell's been good. I forget, who do they even have at three? Tim Hardaway Jr.'s been good. They're a surprisingly deep team. Obviously, Rick Carlisle's one of the most underrated coaches in the league with just what he can do. I was even with Luka, I was shocked to see that they were number one offensively. And again, that's without Porzingis doing much of anything at all. So they've been really fun to watch. And they just obviously add another potential playoff team into that mix, because Luka's clearly too good to let them not be a playoff contender at this point.
Yeah, my really clear issue is that I don't think any of these players except for Luka Doncic are good, especially including Kristaps Porzingis, who's looked wildly inefficient and frankly terrible at defense, and has had huge trouble being guarded by smaller players, not just Marcus Smart, but others. I am really, really worried about how much money they're giving Porzingis and frankly how he's behaved outside of how he's played. I almost worry that it's a handcuff to Luka Doncic, who otherwise has all the potential in the world. I don't think any of those other role players outside of specifically Seth Curry, who does his job perfectly, and Maxi Kleber, who's been great. I really have been enjoying watching Maxi Kleber, actually. And Dwight Powell, who's very much just has a role and does it well. I don't think any other player there really provides a lot, and all three of those guys are really one-dimensional. So I don't know how much this team could succeed if it's relying on Tim Hardaway Jr. to isolate so much. I don't know how much this team could succeed if Jalen Brunson, who's essentially a post-up point guard, is still taking possessions away from Doncic. But I think Doncic could win MVP as soon as the season. Like I said, I have him second right now, and I think he will definitely... Bill Simmons posted an over-under of 2.5 for career MVPs on Doncic, and I'm over right now for sure.
Yeah, well, one of the interesting things I wanted to mention is that Trae Young's looked mostly very good this year. And I think that a lot of people are, you know, saying, oh, look, they both won the deal. And no, they didn't. Trae Young is a good offensive player. Luka Doncic is like a 21-year-old potential 5-6-time MVP candidate who's almost averaging a triple-double, who's also 6'8". No, he's not great at defense, but he's still better than Trae Young.
Right, he's not a great defender, but he's kind of a not bad defender right. and at a position that
And I think we can I think we can acknowledge that Trae Young is really good and maybe better than a lot of people thought, but I think that's just because a lot of people thought he was going to be a bust and he's might be a star, but there's still a huge gap between where he is and where he will get to and where his ceiling is compared to where Luka's is, and therefore that was still the wrong trade to make, and I think that's important that people realize that.
Yeah, that whole draft is going to be really interesting because I still think every single team in that top five, with the exception of the Suns, got the player they want for their future. But I also think that the Suns, they regret their pick, all right, but I don't think they're unhappy with Ayton. But it's very, very clear that the best player was picked third, the second best player was picked fifth. That's undeniable now. Okay. So it's going to be interesting to review that draft more or less by how it goes in the future rather than how it went now. But, you know, by the same design, you could say that the most famous bust of the last decade, who went second overall before Dwayne Wade, before Carmelo Anthony, before anybody else in the LeBron James draft, won a championship before any of them. So were the Pistons necessarily unhappy with that, you know?
Well, I think it's just, I think the problem with it is more that this isn't something like hindsight, you know, is 2020. It's that, no, everyone knew he was the best player in the draft and teams still passed on him. And one team actively traded away from him to get a different player. And now he's just as good, if not better, than everyone thought pre-draft. I think that's my biggest issue with it. If it's something where people didn't see it, then, you know, it is what it is. But this is something everyone knew and still got wrong. And that's what's kind of amazing to me about sports teams, front offices, that it can be obvious to so many people and somehow it's not obvious to them.
Right. For instance, the MVP candidate in Baltimore in the NFL, who was picked 32nd yes. overall, even though every single person who watched college football knew that he was the best quarterback in the class.
Yeah.
And it's
just the difference between smart people and dumb people, especially in the Lamar Jackson case, where it's literally just, oh, this guy's really good, let's make him the focal point of our offense. And in basketball, it's similar. You have the guy who's amazing, let's do everything around him, let's base everything we do around him. I think that's maybe why he might not have fit quite as well with the Kings, who obviously already had De'Aaron Fox. But still, if you have a chance to get a guy like Luka, I feel like you have to take him.
Right, that's always going to be the question with the Kings, because I stand by what the Kings did, because essentially they said, we think De'Aaron Fox is our franchise, and if we pick Luka Doncic, he no longer would be. So they picked a complimentary piece where they thought could still be an all-star, and I still think can. But at the same time, I'm happy with it because De'Aaron Fox is my favorite player, and he's on my favorite team, and that rules. But logically, the best move would have been to bring Luka in, let Fox develop next to him, maybe off the bench even, and trade him for somebody who's complimentary to Luka instead, because it's very clear that's the MVP caliber player here. De'Aaron Fox is an all-NBA caliber player, not an MVP caliber player. That's quite the jump.
Yeah.
It's the difference between, say, Chris Paul, who should have won an MVP award but hasn't, but I would still describe as an all-NBA caliber player, and James Harden, who's put up 37 points this season. You know, one of them's great. One of them maybe will get you to the Eastern Conference Finals next to James Harden. But the other one's James Harden, so, you know.
Yeah. Well, speaking of James Harden, let's talk about the Rockets, because I think they're in worse trouble right now than the Blazers or the Kings, as long as they keep playing the way they do. I think they have the least depth in the league.
To clarify, we're talking about the 7-3 Rockets, third in the West. I do agree with you, but go on.
Yes, we are. Obviously, James Harden is close to averaging 40 points. He may have to now that Eric Gordon's out even longer. But their team is now James Harden, Russell Westbrook, and Clint Capella, with a little added side of P.J. Tucker, and I think those are the only four players I can name on that team. Ben McLemore is currently starting for them.
Daniel House
is fine.
He's better than Ben McLemore.
True. And yet Ben McLemore is starting somehow. So... I've watched a few just spurts of their games, and just everything that we saw in the preseason, I'm not really seeing anymore. Russ has kind of gone back to taking the shots that he always has taken his whole life, that people somehow thought D'Antoni was going to coach out of him. He's still doing a little better, but they're not running those massive back cuts with him that were all over the internet during the preseason. And obviously defensively, they're just as bad as everyone. everyone thought they would be.
Right. So, and, it doesn't help that we've seen from a burner account yesterday that their owner hates all of them and doesn't want to pay the luxury tax. He hates all of his players except for James Harden. He hates his own general manager.
And
Tillman Fertitta. Tillman Fertitta, who his burner account name was referencing the fact that he was very fit. So somehow a billionaire named Tillman Fertitta, who was afraid to stand up to anyone, turns out shockingly a bit of a douchebag. Who knew?
Yeah, so they're in trouble. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. They could still kind of right the ship, but they don't really have any. There's no forward looking for them, and they're with Daryl Morey. There never really is, and fortunately, he usually seems to make the right decision. But at some point, they're going to run out of pieces and run out of moves, and this team isn't winning a championship or really getting anywhere near it. So, and they don't have, for instance, like the Blazers have a Zach Collins and Anthony Simons to look forward to should for some reason this not work out. They have James Harden, and that's it. No draft picks, no really anything. So
there was a quote about 3 years ago. Daryl Morey said, "We always have a Hall of Fame point guard on the floor," when he was talking about how they stagger their players. That's still true. The only problem is they have nobody else around them. They used to have incredible collection of 3-and-D players, including Chris Paul, who was a better defender than either Harden or Westbrook had been at any point in their life, even at 34 years old. Now their best 3-and-D player is Daniel House. There's a U in there, so I'm assuming it's pronounced Daniel. It's very strange. He's a junior. Their second best perimeter defender is PJ Tucker, who operates best as a small ball center and doesn't really fit with the starting lineup. And their third best perimeter defender might be Eric Gordon, who's a kind of portly 6-foot tall point guard who's best at shooting threes off the bench and usually staggered with one of the other point guards. So, rough stuff.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they go. I haven't actually been able to watch a lot of these top tier teams, but I've seen a few of them and haven't been overly impressed with really anyone but the Clippers, who just really need to start Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell at this point, or at least Montrezl Harrell. There's no reason for it. But that's all I have to say about the Clippers. They'll be fine. They're really good. Kawhi's really good. They have Paul George coming back. Should we talk about the Suns briefly?
The Suns are... Okay, well, rather than talk about the Suns, I want to talk about the most interesting storyline on the Suns, which is that Aaron Baines is an all-star right now.
Yeah, and he's not only an all-star, he's playing 35 minutes or something like that. Obviously, Ayton went down with the PED suspension, which unfortunately has hit a few people, as the NBA randomly seems to start enforcing it all of a sudden.
Right. They started to realize that normal people don't look like that because he looks like David Robinson, except bigger. Also, they got John Collins, who's not nearly as thick or as jacked, so maybe I just don't know how to spot these things.
And Wilson Chandler is a little bit chubby.
Right.
But
hey, you've got to hide the muscle mass, man.
Yeah.
It's a good plan. Same with PJ Tucker. PJ Tucker's righted up. We just don't see it.
Yeah. I think what's interesting, though, is I wasn't necessarily convinced that Rubio was the right guy, but when the signing was announced, I did think it was important that Devin Booker got to play with the real point guard. And that's pretty much what is happening, right? Like, people didn't like how much money they paid him. They didn't think he was that great. They didn't get why he was on a team that shouldn't be trying to win yet. But he's made Devin Booker way better. They've looked good. Monty Williams should be probably coach of the year at this point.
For sure. King's looking real dumb for deciding on Luke Walton, even though Monty Williams was on their list.
Yeah.
Without interviewing Williams. Lakers looking real dumb for being such a terrible franchise that Monty Williams didn't want to go there, even though he was on their list.
Yeah. But obviously you mentioned Aaron Baines, who is not only a great, all of a sudden, elite three-point shooter, but he's also running off picks at the top of the key. He's pretty much commanding the whole offense. He's making high-low passes
best,
and
obviously best interior and best wing defender.
Yeah. I need to catch a Suns game because I still haven't watched more than a quarter of them play. But obviously, Booker looks really good. Rubio looks good. Baines looks good. Mikal Bridges looks good. Crazy.
Kelly Oubre always looks good.
Kelly Oubre is looking better than, or more consistent
beautiful
than he
eyes.
Ever has. And then he's been out. So good for the Suns. I don't know how many games they'll win. They probably seem like a 500 team, but that's a lot better than 22-win team at this point.
Full respect to the Suns. I think they're going to win about 38 games. I think they're very much like the Kings last year. Aaron Baines at some point is not going to be an all-star. Right now, he's probably the fourth best center in the league. That doesn't feel sustainable. But I think he is going to wildly outplay his contract the whole season. I easily could see him as about a 17-10 guy with two blocks. I just don't think he's going to be the best player on a playoff team for the rest of the year. Again, though, very attractive team. Ricky Rubio looks great. Aaron Baines looks great. Kelly Oubre looks great. Devin Booker, I guess people find him attractive. I don't really get that one. So good on you, Phoenix Suns. That's something.
Well, speaking of Aaron Baines, let's talk about a team who could really use Aaron Baines while also has been really good, which is the Celtics in the East.
Right, which is, I would say, an Aaron Baines away from being a championship contender.
Well, they're an Al Horford away from being a championship contender, but...
Apparently. But nowadays, Aaron Baines is better.
This is true.
Brave New World.
So, the Celtics have gone full 2017 Celtics, right? They've gone back to pretty much exactly how they played under Brad Stevens in 2017 when they made that deep playoff run with the rookie Tatum and Brown and all that stuff. Unfortunately, Gordon Hayward became the fourth elite player to break his hand this year. So he'll be out for a while, and he had been finally back after taking the Paul George year after the leg break to finally get back to health. So that's really unfortunate. They do have wing depth, though, so you'd think Tatum and Brown would be able to absorb pretty much what he's been doing. They don't have Kyrie, but they also don't have two other players who kind of suck the air out of the ball, and Marcus Morris and Terry Rozier, who are both useful players, but don't let that offense run through Tatum and Brown. They've looked really good. It's a bummer Hayward went down. It's also a bummer that they are either an Al Horford or an Aaron Baines away from probably being on par with Philly and Milwaukee right now.
Yeah, my thing with the Celtics more than anything else is we were talking about MVP candidates earlier, and I think Kemba Walker right now is right behind those four guys. He has been better than Kyrie Irving, Kyrie Irving's role last year by a lot. And more importantly, everybody likes him and doesn't hate him. So that's a pretty good feat that he's got going. I've been really happy just watching him play basketball and be happy playing basketball. As a really big fan of that 1 year of his at UConn, I've been waiting for him to arrive in the NBA for quite some time, and even when he was an all-star on the Hornets, he really hadn't. And he's the leading scorer in that franchise's history. So I've been very pleasantly surprised just by that more than anything else. Big fan of Celtics Twitter, which means I'm a big fan of Marcus Smart, and he's obviously had a great year both offensively and defensively. Jaylen Brown's living up to his contract. They get Hayward back in 4 weeks, and I think they'll be fine with him. If they can find a center anywhere, this is a team to watch.
Yeah.
Something I'd really like to see is if the Kings get to a point where Richaun Holmes is expendable, the Celtics have all of those picks that are probably going to end up around 20 to 30. If they could send maybe a first and a second, a first expected to be around 20th to the Kings for a Richaun Holmes, I think that becomes maybe not on the par of Al Horford, let alone the vaunted Aaron Baines. But that's a center who could actually guard your Joel Embiid, your even switch on to your Giannis Antetokounmpo's, and suddenly we're talking about a team that can actually win it all.
Well, they should really want Dwayne Dedman, am I right?
I would love it if they wanted to spend $14 million over the next 2 years on Dwayne Dedman. Superstar, who I'm not at all disappointed by. Oh, one more note on the Kings, by the way. You know who's really good and very much worth his contract is that guy that nobody really believed in and talked about and definitely hadn't won a championship before, Harrison Barnes. Turns out he's a very good wing defender and good off-ball
player.
Harrison
Barnes is such a bizarre case. I think everyone kind of forgets how he was like a crucial part of the Warriors team. Harrison Barnes is good. I think people are more mad that they chose to spend that money on him rather than someone like Bogdanovich, which they're not the same player, so I don't really get that.
Harrison Barnes is a much better player than Bogdanovich. It's actually not close.
Yeah. I don't know. I think people just are biased against Harrison Barnes. But let's move on to
as somebody who has seen every game of Bogdanovich's career, I like him a lot. I would much rather have Harrison Barnes than Bogdanovich.
Let's move on to the Sixers, who are pretty much experiencing, you know, they started off 6-0. So this is another team that their record's great and they're going to be fine. But I think a lot of the very real issues that a lot of people saw coming are still there. Embiid did not get into shape like he was supposed to. He's been injured. Ben Simmons did not learn how to shoot, and he is earning his 36th spot on my top 50 players list, really looking like they maybe should trade him for someone good.
Averaging 14 points a game.
Josh Richardson's been okay. Al Horford's been okay. Neither one of them has been kind of as good as I would have expected them to be. They don't have a bench. Thibault's been great, but they don't have any offense off the bench. The spacing is still kind of wonky. Brett Brown doesn't seem to know how to design an offense. I don't know if that's a Brett Brown issue or just a roster construction issue. It's probably a little bit of both. But it's really hard when Al Horford is the best shooter on your roster, and that's kind of where we're at right now with them.
Oh, yeah. They have some real spacing issues, specifically their spacing issues that Josh Richardson's not as advertised. Their other spacing issue, and I think this is by far the biggest one, is that Joel Embiid wants to be that shooter for some reason. I think maybe because the degree to which Ben Simmons doesn't want to be that shooter, Embiid feels the need to do that. But anytime he does that, he's taking away his best ability, and that's just something a player of his caliber should never be doing, in my opinion. Concern about Embiid's willingness to, first of all, his willingness to play what he needs to be playing, but more importantly than that, his willingness to actually take over games instead of letting Ben Simmons try to take over games, or worse yet, instead of getting hurt, which is what he seems to like to do a lot. So
I mean,
my take that he's the best center in the league is on shaky ground, but not the reasons I expected.
I think he is if he can take care of himself, and some people just don't do it, and he just seems like someone who's kind of incapable of following through on staying healthy and, you know, eating well and keeping in shape. And Ben Simmons just seems like the kind of the guy that he's been for the last 3 years. He just doesn't seem to have any desire to get better at anything outside of kind of what God-given talent he has, right? And he's been 3 or 4 years, and he hasn't added really anything to his game whatsoever, which is really disappointing considering he's a 6'10 guy. He's an obscenely good passer, great ball handler, great transition, and yet he hasn't added even a passable jumper or even a passable kind of Sean Livingston type 10-footer. Are they still the, what do you think they're still the favorites in the, I had them, I think we both had them in the finals. If you had to pick between them, Milwaukee, and a fully healthy Boston right now, who would you pick in a playoff series?
I would pick so we're saying it's a 2-3 series, presumably?
What's that?
A 2-3 series, presumably, semifinals.
Who would you take to make it out of the East, out of the three of them?
Oh, out of the three, though, I still have the Sixers. Out of those two specifically, Milwaukee and Boston, is a much tougher game. I think I have Boston still, even though they still have nobody who really can guard Giannis, haven't for a very long time. But at the end of the day, they just have so much talent, and they still have such a high ceiling because they're getting Hayward back, and Hayward's playing at that level. I still have them, and I really think they will find a center by then.
See,
but if we're talking about all three, it's still Philly. They just have too much talent.
Yeah, I mean, they're clearly the top three still. I think Milwaukee is... I don't know how to kind of gauge how good Milwaukee's going to be in a playoff series. Honestly, right now, this is obviously an overreaction to the start of the season, but if Boston's able to find a center, just because I think they have a superior coaching, like a massive coaching advantage in any matchup with Philly, I think that they might be able to beat Philly in a playoff series right now, just because they have the talent. They have the talent all over the roster, as you just mentioned, especially with a Hayward that's playing at Utah levels of Hayward. They have that. Even if they can't find a center, if they can just find like a Rashawn Holmes type that can just kind of plug and play, the starting lineup of Walker, Brown, Tatum, and Hayward is terrifying. And when you have Brad Stevens coaching in the playoffs, I wouldn't bet against them in a playoff series against either of those teams right now. I don't know if Milwaukee's deep enough.
Right. And when
I don't think Philly, I think Philly has flaws that I don't know if they're going to be able to fix without trading Ben Simmons, which they won't do. So I think just 10 games into the season, I would no longer be surprised, and I would see what the odds of Boston are making it out of the East, because that might not be the worst bet in the world at this point.
Another thing for the playoffs is if they come against a team that's willing to let them play small, they can forget a lineup where you replace that center with Marcus Smart.
Yeah.
And that is four terrifying perimeter defenders in Kemba Walker, and all four of those guys have their own offensive ability that they could do something with, and that's terrifying.
Well, I'm just trying to think of who, what kind of center could Boston ostensibly get that would make them, you know, push them up a level. Steven Adams maybe is the obvious one. I'm not sure if he's really worth it.
Steven Adams is for sure the standout, unless the Sixers get tired of Al Horford, in which case, do that deal tomorrow.
Yeah.
We joke about Deadman, but I actually think if the Kings are still in some sort of dire straits on December 15th, Deadman would not be a bad acquisition for them. At $14 million, he's expensive for what he is, but he's excellent interior defender who can shoot threes, and that's really all they need from that position anyway. As long as they don't ask him to play make the way the Kings are. Realistically, the most likely great scenario for them is that the Suns fall off and fall to about 30 win pace by the trade deadline, and they reacquire Aaron Baines for a much higher price than they gave him up for. I feel like that's a win-win for both teams. Aaron Baines would fill every need they have the way he's playing, and frankly would fill every need they have the way he played last year.
Milwaukee, real fast. Giannis is playing at a kind of unstoppable rate. He's kind of hitting threes. I think his rate's at about 27-28%. More importantly, he's taking them, though.
Right.
Chris Middleton just got injured. I think he has some sort of thigh contusion or something like that, so he'll be out for a month or so. I think Wes Matthews has been really good for them, though. Brogdon was a loss that I think maybe people said, I think everyone was saying Brogdon's loss was underrated and got overrated, and now he's been playing so well in Indiana that's now underrated again. They could really use Brogdon, and potentially they could really, really regret that if, you know, they get knocked down the semis again because of a lack of a ball handler outside.
If they get knocked out by Indiana.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of talk about how Al Horford is more valuable not on the Celtics than he is valuable on the Sixers. The same could very well be true of Malcolm Brogdon.
Although he has been spectacular for the Pacers. But, yeah, the lack of willingness to pay that luxury tax for Brogdon didn't make sense at the time when you're considering who he is. Obviously, there's some concern with his foot and his injury history. But when you have Giannis for only another 2 years before he gets to make a decision, I don't see how you don't spend the luxury tax on someone like Brogdon, who has been a 50-40-90 guy for 2 years, essentially.
Right, and really requires no extra shots or any requirement or assumption that he's ever going to become a star, which is very rare for a player that good.
Yeah.
I have real concerns about their point guard rotation in the playoffs more than I do in the regular season. Obviously, we know that both of those guys, Bledsoe and Hill, are good players, but last year both of them disappeared in the playoffs and Brogdon did not. And that could become really, really concerning, especially if we're talking about a team who's had some issues with Brook Lopez this year and has had some issues with Chris Middleton being hurt. Giannis really needs that help to get through. He's a great player, obviously, but this is not a league where one player can just get through a playoffs, because nobody is LeBron James for 2015 anymore, including LeBron James circa 2019. They have one more team in the East that I feel we need to talk about, and I don't so much want to talk about the team so much as I want to talk about two players, and they are Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam. The Toronto Raptors are a fine team, excellent in every way. They were excellent last year.
I want to throw Chris Boucher in there too, Oregon legend.
Chris Boucher, a two-hand block and a loss on Montreal Harrell that was frankly dope as hell. My two-game hot take from the tournament 2 years ago, 3 years ago when we were actually living together, that Chris Boucher was the best player on that team before he got hurt. That you, as somebody who actually watched the Oregon Ducks, did not agree with at all, suddenly looking great now that Jordan Bell's basically out of the league.
I think that Chris Boucher was certainly, he was the piece that kind of destroyed them when, well, he didn't destroy them because they ended up making it to the Final Four that year.
Right.
But
they would have won if Jordan
they would have won. They would have won
five
that game, and they potentially could have won a title if Chris Boucher had been in. But I'm glad he's in. He's been tearing it up in the G League for a little while now, and he looks really good. You know, he's a 7-foot guy who is an elite 3-point shooter and an elite shot blocker. And I never understood why he wasn't in the league.
Right, he's what you want to sell up to develop into.
Yeah.
And he's already that.
He has a quick release on his shot, too. But yeah, Fred
VanVleet
leading the league in minutes, I believe, this season. And obviously, Lowry. Did Lowry break his hand, too? I think it was a thumb injury. I don't think he broke his hand, but he had a thumb injury, so now Van Fleet's going to have to play more. They have this weird bench rotation of players like Terrence Davis, who I've never heard of, and they have a couple people coming off their bench that I've never heard of, but they're 7-3. They're looking really good. Siakam, obviously, a low-tier MVP candidate right now. Kind of like a Giannis light.
Right.
I think a lot of people
back to that list, he's probably 6.
Yeah.
I think Pascal Siakam, a good comparison for him is what the Kings and Marvin Bagley would be already. He is just like an omni-forward, multi-positional, more or less a wing and a big at the same time, in the same way Giannis is without the point guard skills. Unbelievably good at the pick and roll on both sides of it, and more importantly than anything else, just has that hilarious second jump that gets him all those offensive rebounds and all those easy points. It's how he got 40 in the first game of the season, and it's
That was incredible. That game against the Pelicans, he was incredible. I think the one problem that we might see now that Lowry's out is that he's good on ball, but he's gotten a lot better than he ever has been. But I think eliminating, like, when you have to put the ball in his
hand.
He's
a good ball handler, but not a good.
No, and I think that.
I just don't think he's a playmaker. He's
no,
a
he's not.
Handler.
And also, it takes away from everything he's good at off the ball, like spot up corner threes and slashing to the hoop and offensive rebounding and all that stuff, and it also makes them more of a central focus, which is a little more challenging. I'm interested. The Blazers play them tonight, so I'm curious to see what he'll look like without Lowry. But really impressive coaching job by Nick Nurse early in the season. They're certainly a capable fourth or fifth seed in the East right now.
I would go further and say that it's an even better coaching job by their G League development staff, because all three players we just talked about came through the G League. Two of them were G League MVPs, and none of those three players were supposed to be actual NBA players.
Yeah,
I remember, as you do too, Fred VanVleet at Wichita State was worse than Ron Baker, and now Ron Baker is a joke on a former Knicks player with floppy hair, and Fred VanVleet is an NBA champion.
Yeah, I mean, I've been arguing the Blazers don't have a, I don't know if the Kings do, but the Blazers do not have their own G League team. And I think that's, I think NBA basketball is such a development based sport, and it certainly can happen internally, but it's a lot better to have, you know, unless with the exception of maybe someone like Anthony Simons, who's supremely talented. Maybe you want him to be around Damian Lillard, but for someone like Fred VanVleet or Pascal Siakam or any of those guys, you want their Chris Boucher, you want them to just be getting time. And you want them to have control over who's coaching them, and that's something that teams with G League teams have that other teams don't. I think it's bizarre that not every NBA team has their own G League team. Toronto obviously uses them very well.
And the Raptors 905, I believe, only Raptors 905 are only 3 or 4 years old. They're one of the younger teams.
Yeah. Well, we're nearing the hour mark.
They also need to know that their G League team is based in their suburbs, so it's a 10-minute commute.
Yeah.
Whereas the Sacramento G League team is formerly based in Reno, just moved to Stockton because it was such an issue. Multiple occasions where players couldn't come back from assignments because they were snowed in.
Well, I think Portland still uses the Fort Worth or Texas team for theirs, which is obviously completely pointless. All right, we have about a minute left. Any last words on the NBA going forward? Any changes in title predictions at this point? Still think it's going to be the Clippers?
Yes. They're getting Paul George back. They've looked not amazing, but still very good. They're getting Paul George back. They're not going to have any problems.
Yeah.
I still think very specifically that Colin Sexton's going to be good, even though he's not really been a part of Cleveland being good. PJ Washington is the best PJ in the league, and I'm really excited about it because the Hornets are not a horrible team anymore, and that's kind of charming.
We were wrong about Tyler Hero.
Michael Porter Jr. needs to play. Free Harry Giles. Bullshit that they didn't give him his extension. I would rather he succeed somewhere else than fails here, so good luck to him.
All right, well, that'll wrap it up. We'll be back.